for me, I'm definitely a longer term investor, but I still know a lot of investors want a capital event pretty quickly. You know, nobody wants 100 grand, 200 grand, any amount of money tied up for just 10 years. So I want to find deals that we can get into, do a ton of work, force value, and either sell or refinance relatively quickly. I would prefer to refinance because I want to be an owner. I don't want to be a glorified flipper. So for me, being able to have that liquidity event within a couple of years, get people some money back or a lot of money back, I think makes people more inclined to go longer because there's less money tied up.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm very excited to introduce our guest for the day, Chris Grenzig. Chris, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Suja.
Absolutely. Really excited to get into what it is that you're working on and how you got there. So everyone, Chris is the founder of JAG Communities, which is a vertically integrated multifamily focused investment firm based in Jacksonville, Florida. So I'm really excited to hear about how you got to where you are. Why don't you start us off, Chris, by telling us a little bit about how and why you got into real estate?
Yeah, so it kind of goes back as far as college. So I graduated college back in 2014. I was a Division I soccer player and didn't really know what I was going to do coming out of school. So tried coaching Division II for a couple years, did 1 year up in Massachusetts, and then came back to Long Island, New York, where I'm from, where my college was, and was trying to just figure out what to do from there. And got a job in the business world and also in the investing world, which was being a cold caller for a stock brokerage company. So I'd make 400, 500, 600 calls a day, random people trying to connect them with licensed brokers. And then eventually got licensed myself. But when I got licensed, I kind of really became disillusioned with the industry. It was very much focused on yourself. So how many commissions can I make and not how much money can I be making my client, which is the complete opposite of what it should be. But that's kind of how it was. So I knew pretty quickly I wanted to get out, but I had bills and stuff. So I was looking for something else.
Just for a second, for those listeners who aren't quite familiar how this works. So like when you would get commissions as a stockbroker, like how did that, did you get paid up front for certain things?
You know, when it closes, right? When they send money or whatever, you get like a 1 or 2% commission on the purchase. So if it was a $50,000 order, you might get, what would that be, like $500 or $1,000 if it was, you know, 500 or whatever. So, I mean, and there were guys in that office doing tens of thousands of dollars a month. And I saw a guy do, you know, over 100 grand a few months in a row in commission. So people making tons and tons of money, but that's all they focused on. It was never a focus on, you know, how much my clients were making every month. And it really hit me one day when, really nice, my aunt called me up and she knew I was getting started and, you know, off of my own stuff. She's like, hey, I've got like this small brokerage account. Would it help if I transferred it over to you? And like, I knew instantly I had to say no, because I was like, I don't know what I'm going to not be forced to do, but like what the company is going to want me to do with stuff. And it's really going to be, you know, trying to find these crazy pops, and realistically they didn't know what they were doing and nobody knows where the stock market's going to go. So I was just like, no. And once I knew that, I was like, okay, I got to get out. Like that, if I can't even take my family's money, like how can I take some stranger's money? So fortunate enough though, that at the time my mom, my cousin bought a flipping course and we tried flipping single family homes for a little while, completely failed, never bought a home, never sold one, never put one under contract. But what it did lead to was through networking of different things, I met a guy by the name of John Cohen, and he had transitioned from buying tax deeds into small multifamily and then was working on large multifamily stuff with his partner, Don, at a company called Tor Real Estate Partners. So John, my mom, my cousin, and I partnered on a few smaller things. We did about 100 units across multiple properties. And then just small world, John had worked for the same people I was working for as a stockbroker and had left about 5-6 years prior. And him and his partner, Don, who focused on much larger deals, 100 to 500 unit properties, were talking about bringing somebody on as kind of their first hire. And I was like, let me come over. We'll try it out. And if in 3 months you hate it, you know, no hard feelings. Well, 3 months turned into 4.5 years, turned into me running the Florida region of their portfolio. So while I was there, we bought 4,000 units worth roughly $300 million on purchase, about 23 properties. 1,000 of those were in Florida, which I oversaw. And then kind of as we were getting into COVID, I was thinking about buying a deal on the side just for myself. When COVID hit, I thought it was going to be really a great buying opportunity. Never really turned into the world's best buying opportunity, but you know, still wanted to buy something on the side. Found this 16-unit deal literally around the corner from a deal we had just bought with Toro. It was super great, really liked it. You know, going to be a fantastic deal when all said and done. And as I kind of put it under contract and was closing it, a lot of people asked like, hey, what does this mean? Are you going off on your own? Blah, blah, blah. I was like, no, I wasn't planning on it. But as I started thinking about it more and more, I had so many people ask me, I was like, maybe I should, like, maybe now's, you know, the right time to do it. And I kind of sat there and I was like, I don't really have any reason not to. And I didn't want to turn 80, 90 years old and look back and regret it. So I said, screw it. Talked to John and Don, said, hey, I think I'm going to leave. They were overwhelmingly supportive, which was amazing. And November of 2020, we closed on that deal. I moved from New York to Jacksonville and started my own company called Jag Community. So we focus on, you know, existing multifamily and trying to get into development as well for small to mid-size deals right now. So 10 to 100 units. And we're vertically integrated. So we also do property management and the construction management. Right now we've got 40 units worth about $3 million in change. And we're under contract on another 20 with hopefully another deal under contract within the next day or so.
Amazing stuff. I mean, I think there's so much there in that story that you just shared about like how things actually happen in this industry and like how you can actually get to where you are. Like it's a series of events and staying committed to what's happening. But, you know, like you said, your very first thing that you guys tried or thought about trying, like just failed, right? But it, you mean you didn't do any flipping, but then it led to something else, which you just keep at it and led to something else and led to something else. And then eventually you found yourself in a position where you actually were prepared to go out on your own and start doing your own deals, which is, I think that's just such an important trajectory that you just shared.
Yeah. I mean, the pivot is huge. You know, a lot of people I see get stuck in like, as they're trying to figure it out, like, what should I focus on? Like, should I do wholesaling? Should I do this? Should I do that? And it's like, you know, you research enough topics, you're going to come up with a few that you like. And unfortunately, you won't really know if you like it until you start doing it. So the way I always lay it out is, if you knew today it was going to take you 6 months to realize, like you had to start and it was going to take you 6 months to realize wholesaling wasn't for you. Well, if you delay your decision by 3 months, it's not 6 months anymore. Now it's 9 months. So you're only prolonging the realization of what works for you and what doesn't. So at some point, you just got to pick something and try it. And it might take you 6 months. It might take you 2 weeks, but you won't know until you start going down that path. You'll know some things aren't for you, right? Like as much as I would love to, you know, build high rises in Manhattan, that's just not realistic for me. And I don't think it's something I would want to do anyway. So I can, you know, cross that out pretty quickly. The same thing where, you know, I don't really want to manage mobile home park communities. So I knew moving down that that wasn't really something I wanted to do either because I wanted to be vertically integrated. So like you can kind of remove a lot of things early on and then you start whittling it down and then pick one, try it, and then just go from there.
For sure. Okay. Awesome. So just for our listeners who aren't familiar with that term vertically integrated, it's just part of the lingo. Can you just explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, I would say in, you know, the multifamily investment firm community, vertically integrated usually means owning the deals and also doing the property management, but vertically integrated as a whole just means, you know, bringing in different elements of the business that instead of outsourcing it, you would insource it. So that could mean accounting, it could mean manufacturing, but as far as our business goes, typically it means the property management side. And then I also loop in the construction management side because, you know, I'm out there a few times a week, you know, checking in on our renovations, our projects, different things going on, stuff like that. And eventually I will have a dedicated project manager who handles that on a day-to-day basis and hopefully also have a rehab team internally as well that'll oversee that as well.
Yeah, for sure. And why did you choose to self-manage rather than, you know, have a property manager?
A couple reasons. One, I think property managers that manage less than 100 unit properties, it's tougher to find good ones. And I think the reason people don't scale up is usually not for the best reasons. You can find property management companies that like specialize in 10, 20, 30 unit properties or single family. But more often than not, there's another reason why. And the reason I say that is because the time, energy, and resources it takes to manage a 20 unit is not 10 times greater to manage a 200 unit. In some instances, it's actually the same amount of work or easier because you can have full-time staff at that 200 unit property, which takes a lot away from you, but the dollars are significantly larger. So people that are looking to build a business and scale up just by, you know, the market will eventually scale up into bigger projects. So for one, I had a manager who was very new that I was thinking about using before I was going to move down. But as I started thinking about it, I was like, maybe she moves up. Maybe I don't have her. It was just another risk on top of it that I wasn't completely sure about. And two, the other reason was there's really three. The second reason, I knew I had a big gap in my knowledge, which was the day-to-day operations and also the construction side, because I'd never done it before. Being the asset manager / acquisitions person, there's a lot of things I didn't need to know in my role because we had third-party property managers that handled it. And I just knew what I needed to know. And then anything I knew beyond that was just because I was curious and I just wanted to know. But I felt that knowing a lot more would only make me better at finding deals and underwriting them and managing them as an asset manager if I had some more, you know, hands-on experience. And then third, I also think that when you have two different companies, one being the owner and one being the operational partner in the property manager, even if you're super closely aligned, each company is going to have its own visions, values, expectations for the future. And if you can bring that internally, the potential for the operations and efficiencies is higher internal than it is external. Now, that's not saying the actual operations and stuff isn't going to be better with a third party, because I guarantee right now there's a million other people that could manage these properties better than me today, because I've only been doing it for 11 months roughly at this point, almost 12 months. We're almost at the year mark. So I know I'm not the world's best property manager today. Eventually I'll look to hire with better people with more experience, or I'll just learn over time. But I think having it internally has the potential for higher returns and efficiencies in the future.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, you got to learn somehow. And the more expertise you have in different areas of the business in the long run is going to help you do better. But yeah, I think that's a great choice. And I just wanted to get your take on it. So
yeah. And that's also not to say in 3 years, I'm not going to change my mind and say, screw this, I hate property management.
Totally.
I'll just hire somebody and I'll still be local or more regional, but you know, I wanted to at least try it again, going back to it. I didn't want to not do it and regret it. And I think doing it from day one is easier than trying to finagle it in year two or three when you've got to have so much scale to then be able to bring it internal with a partner if you don't know what you're doing. Whereas from day one, you can kind of figure it out, especially since the first two deals we did were my own capital and close family. So everybody was eyes wide open going into it. And it's only now that we've got, you know, kind of our operations and track record down that I'm starting to raise money from investors.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it's just like you also went, you know how they say you should do a job before you hire it out sometimes. So when you do the property management, then you kind of know what your future property managers, if you choose to go that route, are actually having to deal with on a day. You understand their challenges and can appreciate what they're going through and hopefully be a better asset manager.
Exactly. That was some of the conversations I would have with our property managers in the past. A lot of times there was a disconnect on like why we viewed something one way or why they did something a certain way. And a lot of times it was just that lack of understanding of, you know, you're not in it, you know, the day to day for years, sometimes decades, right? Because we would work with people that have been doing property management for decades, longer than I've been an adult, right? So it's like, you know, sometimes trying to understand why they look at something a certain way or why they do something the way that they do, you know, I lack the understanding. And sometimes it's hard to either communicate it to somebody else or to really get that information from somebody. And honestly, may not be a good use of time, right? Like you don't need to understand why a company does every little thing that it does. But it was that lack of understanding that sometimes I felt like I was missing things or that we could be doing things better as well.
Yeah, totally. Yes. Makes sense all around. So one of the things that your firm JAG focuses on is deep value adds. Is that right? So tell us what you're looking for. Like, are you looking for just the grossest, dirtiest property, or tell me what that looks like in your world?
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-cap.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm definitely a longer-term investor, but I still know a lot of investors want a capital event pretty quickly. You know, nobody wants 100 grand, 200 grand, any amount of money tied up for just 10 years. So I want to find deals that we can get into, do a ton of work, force value, and either sell or refinance relatively quickly. I would prefer to refinance because I want to be an owner. I don't want to be a glorified flipper. So for me, being able to have that liquidity event within a couple of years, get people some money back or a lot of money back, I think makes people more inclined to go longer because there's less money tied up. So by finding those deep deals, not only does it not have to bank so much on the asset itself or the market or you know, kind of natural appreciation or organic rent growth or whatever, you can kind of force it. It also allows you to then put in a lot of things that are newer, which also is better for the long term, right? If you just find a deal that's older and is cash flowing, that's great, but you may have a lot of problems that could come up, right? If you've got 1960s water lines, or if you've got, you know, 1970s sewer lines, those could become problems. Or if you've got 20-year-old AC units, those could become problems where you've got to replace those. If you come in and you do a ton of work and you replace a lot of things because the deal's got enough upside to support it, well, now you've got something that's going to hold its value and hopefully, you know, not have any problems for a while, which then allows for a less risky asset as you hold on to it for the next few years as well. So, you know, I want to find deals where you can do a ton of value and create a great asset that cash flows and then actually kind of reap those rewards, you know, for a few years and then eventually, you know, sell after, you know, 5 or 10 years or whatever it is. But it's just that ability to come in and solve problems and maybe see other things that other people don't, you know, that is really intriguing to me.
Yeah, for sure. That's a really good perspective that if you actually come in and replace pretty much everything or most things, then all of a sudden you kind of know, you're not like wondering when something's going to break because for the most part, you know, you've got new systems and appliances, et cetera, in there. I mean, that's actually more peace of mind than, you know, having like a B or C class asset where things might be continually breaking.
And I mean, some we do more, you know, like our first deal, we're spending 30, 33 a door on doing different things. But the second deal we did is significantly less and it's more cosmetic. So, you know, it depends on the deal. And sometimes you don't need to overspend to make it work. And it's got enough margin to support, you know, so you don't want to always fix things, replace things when they don't need to be fixed until they need to be. But sometimes, you know, some things are proactive. So it's always a balancing act. So, you know, it's not like we're coming in spending 60 a door on all our projects, no matter what, you know, it's just, you kind of look at some of them and, you know, the more work you do, the more stuff you replace, you know, you've kind of got a shell at one age and then you've got a lot of stuff that's been replaced in a more recent year. So you've kind of got a hybrid deal of, you know, maybe it's built in the '60s, but you know, you replaced a lot of it in, you know, 2021. So you've kind of got a mix of not a new development, but you know, a lot of it has been taken care of, which is nice, especially from a buyer standpoint. You know, like the deal we're buying now, they replaced all the plumbing, electrical, AC's, water heaters in 2000 and did the roofs in the last 3 years. So for me, I look at that and I say, okay, that takes a lot of risk off the table. It allows me to just focus on the cosmetic stuff. So it's like, you know, some of those things, it's tough to put a dollar amount on, but they're really nice from a buyer standpoint too.
Yeah, for sure. So for you, what do you classify as deep value add?
It's tough to say. You know, I would say, you know, like really deep is, you know, you take it to the studs and redo everything. I think deep value add is when you look at a deal afterwards and you're like, okay, this is you know, different project, you know, different tenant base, a lot of new things about it. And like, if somebody looked at it at, you know, day one and day 360 or, you know, year two, they would be like, okay, wow, you did a ton of work. So for me, it's kind of like a subjective thing. You know, I know a lot of guys that just come in and they spend $40,000 a door and do a ton of stuff. And, you know, that's to them a deep value. So it's a little subjective, but it's like, for me, it's like, you're going to have to replace a lot of tenants. You're going to have to overhaul. You're going to have to do a lot of work. There's going to be things that are going to be problems, you know, a lot of work that needs to be done. It's not just coming in and slapping on new cabinet fronts and resurfacing countertops.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So let's just, I want to just circle back to something you mentioned, which is that you were a Division I soccer player, right? And then of all the things, without having necessarily knowing what you're going to do after that, of all the things you could have done, why did you want to do real estate?
I didn't really want to. I kind of just fell into it. But the reason I like this business is, you know, I'm basically, you know, when you kind of remove yourself from it and just kind of talk about from the macro, you know, we're basically in the business of buying businesses. That's what we're doing. We're investing in businesses. But when you look at all the other businesses you can buy, you know, one of the largest line items is going to be your marketing spend. You know, you see, I don't know about you, but I'm on Instagram and Facebook all the time. And it's like, I feel like I see the same 10 companies and I think about what they must be spending on marketing. And it's got to be astronomical. When you're in the apartment space and you're renting units, like marketing is sometimes zero, because I know we're going to be listing individual units on, you know, Facebook Marketplace, and that doesn't cost me a nickel. And I know we're going to rent them up. Sometimes I throw in a couple bucks for like Zillow or some sponsor posts just to, you know, get stuff rented quicker. But like, that's amazing. You know, you have an almost unlimited number of customers. You're limited by the number of people in the area, if not the country, because people could be moving and you don't really have to spend much to acquire them. There's such an asymmetric ratio for supply and demand in this country for housing units and where people are going. You know, that's really tough to find. So when you can buy a business and take out such a massive portion of it, of acquiring new customers and doing all the stuff, you know, that's a relatively easy business to run. Now, yeah, if you were to go buy a different type of business, your ceiling for how much revenue you could generate could be significantly higher, because with a property, you're kind of capped to a certain degree on how much you can bring in. Right? Like, you can only make it so nice. You only have so much square footage. You can only rent it for so much compared to the market, but it's also takes a ton of risk off the plate. So for me, you know, it's just like a really good risk reward ratio that I really like. And I don't think it, you know, it's not going away. It's going to be something people always need. So it's like, from a long-term standpoint, which is how I look at it, you know, it's a really good marketplace to kind of be in.
Totally. I think the way you broke that down is very apt and just a great reason to be in the space for sure. So why did you choose Jacksonville? Because you moved from, were you working for Toro in New York?
Yeah. So we were based out of New York. I oversaw Florida. I say Florida because we were looking in Orlando, Tampa, and Pensacola, but we only ever bought in Jacksonville. So it was funny, when I was looking for a deal, I actually started looking in Indianapolis at first. I think Indianapolis is a great market. Whenever I tried to get Toro to invest there for years and years and years. And fortunately we never did. If we did, it would have been fantastic. It's just one of the larger MSAs with one of the best yields. And I don't really understand why it's not more looked into, or, you know, like, you compare it to a Columbus and it's night and day. Like, you get way better cap rates and way better price per unit. And I get it, because Columbus has a lot more going on, but I don't know. Indy's just interesting to me. But anyway, I was looking there for a few weeks. I was just trying to do a ton of research on like better understanding neighborhoods and markets and gentrification, and all that stuff. And I kind of sat there and I looked at myself and I said, you know, understanding a market, you know, the better you understand a market, the less risk you have, because you know a lot of what's going on and you're less likely to make a mistake by buying dirt in the wrong location. And I was like, I've got 4 years worth of market data by buying and looking in Jacksonville at hundreds and hundreds of deals. I was like, what am I doing? Like, this is dumb. I was like, maybe I find a slightly better deal in Indianapolis because I think it's got better cap rates and returns and yields. But from a risk standpoint, I've got way more risk by looking there. So I kind of pivoted from there looking at Jacksonville. And not only do the standpoint of like, I know the market really well, I also just think it's a great market. Tons of people moving. I mean, throw a dart at the state of Florida and there's tons of people moving there, but it's got a really good supply of new housing units to people moving there. So it's not being overdeveloped, in my opinion. It's got a downtown that's ripe for development, and there's a lot of things working on it. So it's not like super built up yet. And then you've also got a lot of in-state migration because it's still cheaper than a lot of your other markets. So basically all of your West Coast, and then it's still cheaper than Orlando, Tampa, South Florida, and even like Daytona is slightly more expensive from a rental standpoint. So you've just got a lot of good factors. And I think it's kind of the redheaded stepchild where a lot of people avoid it for those things. And I love it for that reason. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, I think thanks for that breakdown. I mean, I think that's just a really, that's really interesting how you ended up making that decision. And this whole business is about how we kind of take this vast world of real estate investing and then choose a pathway which to pursue. And so, yeah, thanks for breaking that down. That makes a lot of sense with Jacksonville. And how are you finding deals these days? Because it's still probably pretty competitive, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think the nice thing is by being local and focusing on sub 100 unit properties, I remove a lot of competition. And it's one of the other reasons I moved down was pricing and cap rates on 150 unit plus deals is just continued to go down and compress. And it's like, I don't know. It's, I don't know if it's right or wrong or what. It's the market, so it's not wrong. It just is what it is. But for me, I think there's a real better opportunity or a chance to find more creativity in finding value than I think, you know, some of these larger deals, because I would always say, you know, once you're in a market and you're looking at 150 unit deals plus, if you got a deal or two, you're going to see it before most other people that haven't bought anything there. So it's like, I know that any deal that gets brought to me, unless I'm literally direct owner, you know, it's going to be shopped around, and maybe it works, maybe it doesn't, but you know, there's a reason why, you know, other people are buying and why we were struggling to find larger deals. So for me, being in that kind of tweener space, it allows me to find more creative opportunities. And I think opportunities that a lot of other people are going to pass on just because the size and scope of it and, you know, problems with property management and so forth. So for the interim, it allows me to find kind of interesting opportunities. Eventually, I don't think I mentioned this, but my 10-year vision is to scale to 500 million under management. You know, that'll necessitate me going up into larger assets. But by that time, I intend to have more of a team built up, you know, some competitive advantage in terms of, you know, operating and different things that then will allow me to be more creative as well on some of the larger deals as well, hopefully. So, you know, I think just being boots on the ground, focusing on those deals allows me to be a little bit more creative than some others, as well as too with the heavier lifts, the deep value add stuff, it also eliminates a lot of competition that are, you know, either mom and pop or, you know, the well-off business owner, doctor that's looking to place some capital into real estate. You know, they're not looking for the deal that is got a ton of deferred maintenance or problems going on. You know, they're kind of looking for the set and forget it, or maybe, you know, maybe they do new appliances or new cabinets or something like that. They're not looking for the crazy rehab.
Totally. Well, thanks so much, Chris, for sharing so much about your journey and just like tons of absolutely wonderful information and about how to actually get started and make this business happen. So thanks very much. Please share with the listeners how they can learn more about you and your firm and anything else you want to share.
Yeah, for sure. So probably best place to reach out to me is on social media. I'm most active on Instagram and LinkedIn. So either at chris.grenzig on Instagram or just search Chris Grenzig on LinkedIn. You can also email me. It's chris@jag-communities.com. That's also our website. Depending upon when this goes live, the website may look like the old one, which I don't love, or may look like the new one, which is going to be nice. So if you don't love the look, bear with me. It should get better. Yeah, that's pretty much it. If anybody's interested in investing, you know, just there'll be a investor form on the website you can go fill out. Yeah, that's probably it.
Awesome. All right. Well, I hope you take some time to reach out to Chris, learn about more what he and his firm are working on. Thanks so much again for coming on. We'll see you next time, Chris.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-C-A-P.com. for tons of free educational content to further your success.